outside. And all them crazy murderers would never run from inside. You try to keep me down, cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Monday, October the 23rd, 2023, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you out there who are of goodwill, those of you out there who aren't of goodwill and who have dedicated yourselves to our destruction, well, you know, may all of your plans go up in flames. And we sincerely need to pray for that, folks, because if not, barring some miracle, our world is going to go up in flames, exactly as we are seeing take place right now in real time. I've been a little bit preoccupied, folks. It's not that there isn't lots of important stuff to talk about, because obviously there is. It's just that I've got things on the home front that have to be taken care of, not the least of which is the fact that winter is going to be arriving about 2 months early this week, with snow and frigid temperatures, and so therefore, those of you who know the particulars of my situation here in the mountains of the Northwest know that we have a joke here on the ranch that the apocalypse arrives twice a year here. Once it's known as summer, one time a year it's known as summer, and the other time of the year is known as winter. If it's not fire season, then it's snow season. And when I talk about snow, folks, it's snow that just makes your bones hurt when you hear that word. And so therefore, I've been a little busy trying to get things buttoned up here in preparation for this, what they call an Arctic blast that'll be here, like I said, in just about 15 minutes. But that doesn't mean that there isn't lots of important stuff to talk about. There is. Before we jump into that, however, I want to read something here. It was a very kind email that was sent by one of the listeners to the program that I thought I would share with you because it does provide a nice segue for today's program. And he starts off saying regarding the last program that it was an absolutely amazing, quote, detailed, coherent, illuminating discourse. I wish it could be mandatory for all people who have an interest in both the Arab-Israeli conflict and in world peace. And, you know, I, of course, responded back, you know, thanking him for the kind words, and he followed up with something that I found very profound and which I want to share with all of you. And he says, you know, scholarship barely exists anymore. I'm grateful that you have the depth of knowledge to catch the nuances that I miss, and probably so does everyone else. And he says, in addition, few recognize the degree to which Zionism is an extremely ravenous and dangerous monster, which is fueled by the collective insanity of racist religious nutjobs. That's the part that I do not understand, my friend says. And then he says something very, very profound here in his message, folks, that I would like for you to pay close attention to. He says, people are afraid of lions, hyenas, sharks, tornadoes, aliens, angry teenagers, terrorists, but not fanatic settlers, Jewish settlers, who openly call all of us Gentiles, animals, and who plan for our destruction and enslavement. And I thought that that was very profound, folks, because it's absolutely true. People are afraid of all sorts of things, but the most dangerous existential threat that we all face is from this very, very small group of people who over the last 2,000 years, or really if we want to be honest about it and accurate about it, folks, for the last 4,000 years who have been clawing their way up millimeter by millimeter, inch by inch, to this pinnacle of power that they possess at the moment, wherein they have where the decision of life versus death for every living thing on the planet is in their hands today, right now at this moment. If this group of people decide to push the button or throw the switch or pull the trigger, whatever terminology we want to use that results in the death of everybody and everything, they can do that. And they are inclined to do that, folks, because of exactly what my friend here in his email says. These people who refer to us as animals and plan for our own destruction and enslavement. Now, folks, we're not going to get into a big detailed discussion of what's going on in Gaza. If you've been following the news, if you've been following any commentary that's been taking place on either the right or left wing side of the media spectrum, it's been pretty much a 24/7 coverage of everything. And, you know, obvious, folks, obviously it is a massacre. It is a tragedy. And, you know, generally speaking, I don't miss a minute of talk radio, especially conservative talk radio. I was pleasantly surprised years ago when, during all of this upheaval over Donald Trump, that I heard people such as Rush Limbaugh and others who were, they seemed to start to say the right things in talking about the organized interests who were out to destroy Trump's presidency. Did they hit the bullseye? No, they don't dare do that, folks. Not even Trump himself will hit the bullseye. You know, I was thinking about this in preparing for today's program, you know, a good analogy that we can use for these types. And the best analogy that I found that works is the analogy of chess. And anybody who has played chess knows that you have these various pieces of different importance, a hierarchical status, and each piece moves in a very distinct and particular way. Your pawns move forward one step at a time, except on the first move, in which case they can move two steps. From there, you have your rooks. I'm sorry, not the rooks, the knights, who move in a very particular way. They can move one step up, two steps over, either right or left, or two steps forward and one step left or right. You have your bishops who move diagonally, and they always stay on their own color. And then you have your rooks that move horizontally and vertically, and they can go just about anywhere. And then you have the queen, who is supremely powerful. She can move diagonally, she can move horizontally and vertically, as many steps as she can. And then you have the king, who is the least powerful piece on the whole board. He can only move one step at a time. Even the pawns, which are the smallest pieces, the least powerful pieces on the board, they have more power of movement on that battlefield than the king himself does. And in many ways, folks, people such as Donald Trump and some of these other creatures in the media, the right-wing media, I would say, I'm sure that there's a lot that they would say if they could, but they can't. And getting back to what I was, my original reason for bringing this up and bringing up Trump, I'm sure he would love to share with the American people the real details of what's going on right now, but he can't. He can only speak in code, because if he says the wrong thing, because what is going on here, folks, as I said on the last program, this is a war between Trump and Netanyahu. This is Netanyahu's, meaning the attack on Gaza, you know, that followed the Hamas attack on Israel. This is Benjamin Netanyahu's October surprise. This is his way of getting this war started, which Donald Trump had devoted the 4 years of his presidency to preventing, okay? This is his way of getting this war started before next year's elections here in the United States. Because if, by some miracle, Donald Trump manages to escape all of the grenades that have been thrown in his camp in order to destroy his presidency, and that's, of course, assuming that he actually lives to Election Day, which is a big question mark, then Netanyahu and these Armageddonists that he has in his new government, they want to make sure that this war, this fire, is so big and so hot that no one can put it out, not even Trump. And so, as I said, I know that there are things that Trump would like to say, but he can't, because if he does, you see, what he's doing right now, folks, is that he is trying to peel away that evangelical support from Netanyahu Netanyahu enjoys. This is what Trump did a year or so ago when he gave this interview with this Israeli journalist Barak Ravid, where he released the details of what the real relationship between him and Netanyahu was like, that it wasn't anything like what it was portrayed as being in the mainstream news media, that they were at odds with each other, and what they were at odds over was, one, the creation of a Palestinian state, and number two, making sure that World War III and Armageddon doesn't get started. So Trump has to be very careful about what he says because, again, folks, Netanyahu is the most popular man in America now, especially among the evangelicals. Whatever hope Trump may have had for peeling away some of that support that Netanyahu enjoys here in the United States, whatever hope he may have had has been seriously harmed. Okay. Netanyahu right now, you know, Trump bragged that he more popular in Israel than Netanyahu was, and that if he wanted to, he could get elected prime minister. Well, now Netanyahu has turned the tables on that. Netanyahu is so popular in America now, especially among Trump's right-wing base of support, that if Netanyahu were to run for U.S. president, he would certainly get the right-wing vote. Anyway, so as I said, folks, there are things that I'm sure Trump would like to say, things that he would say if he could, but he knows. It's like that game that we all played when we were young. It's called Operation. And, you know, you've got this board, and you have to go in with these little tweezers. You've got a patient on the table, and you're removing certain parts of his body. And you have to be very careful not to touch the sides of this very small cavern, you know, this little orifice where, there's a bone there, there's a liver there, because if you touch the side of it, then the red light goes on and you hear this sound, and then you lose your turn. That's the situation that Trump is in right now with regards to what he can and cannot say. Interestingly enough, though, folks, since the last time we were together, Trump did take advantage of this attack that took place in Israel to call for Netanyahu's impeachment. And so for all of you out there, all of you geniuses and experts who spent 5 years or longer talking about how Trump and Netanyahu were joined at the hip and how Netanyahu had put Trump into office so that Trump would start World War III, okay, Trump just called for Netanyahu's impeachment. So much for your theories about how chummy they were with each other. Anyway, folks, let's jump into today's discussion. We're not going to get into the particulars of what is going on in Gaza. As far as I'm concerned, as I've said many times, no matter where you go, whether it's on the listening to the radio, whether you're on the internet, whether it's mainstream news, whether it's alternative news, what's taking place 24/7 is some version of what I refer to as the wrong conversation. For example, you know, when COVID was going on, you were hearing all of these talks, you know, in favor of masks or against masks, in favor of vaccines, against vaccines. in favor of mandates against mandates and lockdowns. Okay, every time there's a school shooting or some type of mass casualty event, the talk immediately becomes, you know, on one side, increasing gun regulation, and then the other side arguing against that. And nobody ever gets to the real meat of the discussion that needs to be had, which is what has happened to our society, what has happened to our world, that this has become such a commonplace thing now, especially with young, angry young teenage boys, where they get a hold of a gun and they go into some place and they kill a bunch of innocent people before turning the gun on themselves. Of course, you know, the worst of all the wrong conversations are those involving these nut jobs who say that these are all hoaxes. And by the way, folks, just so that you know, the bombing in the hospital, the bombing of the hospital in Gaza that took place and killed 500 people, that was a hoax. We have a whole slew of experts now saying that it never happened, that the pictures of these Palestinians who have been killed, that they're just mannequins that have been made to look like dead bodies, fake blood, fake body parts, and, of course, the obligatory crisis actors. Yes, folks, I'm as loath as I am to do it, to say that we told you so, yes, we told you so. Almost 12 years ago now, when this whole Sandy Hook hoax nonsense first reared its ugly head, yours truly and the greatly missed Mike Piper warned that this was a poisoned chalice, and that if we drank from this, if we allowed this virus to multiply and to grow, that it was going to become something that would eventually wind up being uncontrollable. And that's exactly what's happened. Imagine, folks, imagine being a Palestinian in Gaza, living through the hell that they're living through right now, and you're curious what kind of coverage that it's getting in America. And you land on this stupid website run by this nitwit who says that it's not happening, that the bombings are not happening, that they're all crisis actors and fake blood. And let's just imagine, you know, you've lost many loved ones in this. Just imagine that for a moment. That's the real deal, folks. That's the kind of nonsense that unfortunately prevails within this joke known as the 9/11 truth movement. Anyway, so folks, we're not going to be talking a lot about Gaza today. What we're going to be talking about is why all of this is happening. Now, those of you who follow the website know that I have taken this thing way past being just a hobby where I view things, you know, in a very superficial way. And instead, you know, we really put the microscope to this thing, to this virus known as Judaism. And, you know, one of the things that we argue is that you're not going to understand, you know, if you allow yourself to get caught up in this tornado of discussion that's taking place out there, you know, all of it some version of the wrong conversation, you're never going to understand it. Now, to get the discussion started here, I'm going to read something. It's a very important primer, folks, because, hold on a second. Yeah, there it is. Okay. Because this is the way that if you don't understand this, you're not going to understand anything. Okay. Now, of course, all of the talk is that this is the result of Islamic terrorism and, you know, a group of people who want to take out over the world using violence for their jihad. So I'm going to read something here, folks. And then we're going to, this is the primer for today's discussion. So, hold on just a second here. Nope, not going to answer that. Okay. So listen carefully here, folks. Okay. So this is from the religious texts that serve as the beating heart for all of this war and bloodshed that's taking place right now. You ready? Here we go. When Allah, brings you into the land that you are to possess and drives out the many infidel nations larger and stronger than you. And when Allah has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them in jihad, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Do not save alive any infidel that breathes. Do not intermarry with the infidels. Do not give your daughters to their infidel sons, or take their infidel daughters for your sons. Break down their altars and churches, smash their sacred stones, and burn their crucifixes in the fire, for you are a people holy unto Allah, who has chosen you out of all of the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. Now, folks, obviously, those of you who are well-read, and especially those of you who follow the work that we do on the website, know that this did not come from the Quran. This is not an Islamic thing. I just changed a few words around here in order to set the stage for this discussion and in order to make a point. Now, this basically is what we have been told since 9/11, is that the Muslims have that they are engaged in holy war against the non-Muslim world. They want to take it over, conversion by the sword. The problem is that this verse that I just read didn't come from the Quran, folks. It came from the Bible. It came from the Old Testament. Old Testament to Christians, the Torah to Jews. Okay? The book of Deuteronomy, to be precise. Now, if I were speaking in any average church in America, if I had been asked to come and speak, and if I were to read exactly what I just read to you, talking about Allah and jihad and infidels and all of the rest of that, the folks in that church, at least here in the United States, would swallow that thing whole hog, hook, line, and sinker. They would say, oh my God, I hadn't run into that one. Sure does sound kind of familiar, though. And they would be outraged that there's this group of people, 2 billion of them in the world, who harbor these kinds of feelings about us, that they are to destroy us totally. You make no treaties or agreements with them. Show them no mercy. Do not save anything alive that breathes. But there is no such verse in the Quran, folks, no such precepts within Islam at all. In fact, the only precepts related to violence are completely rooted in self-defense, but it says nothing about invading and killing innocent people. Judaism, on the other hand, folks, does not just permit this, it commands that it be done. And this portion within the book of Deuteronomy that I just read to you, this is the reason why Gaza right now is being bombed and why we are standing at the precipice literally of not World War III, folks, but World War Z. And it's because the followers of Judaism, who have spent the last 4,000 years clawing their way to the top of the pyramid of power, they are driven by these precepts that I just read to you of taking over the world and killing everybody who gets in their way of attaining this. And the Christians have no problem with this, folks. They have no problem with these words because these are, quote-unquote, the words of God. No, folks, they're not the words of God. They're the words of Moses. Moses is the one who jotted these words down, these ideas down. And not Muhammad, folks, Moses. We don't have a bunch of Muhammad freaks. We have a bunch of Moses freaks. Now, today's discussion, folks, you're going to find very disturbing, but it's a discussion that you need to hear for your own good, because your life is, as I've said before, on many occasions, it's not just going to be overturned. It's in the process of being ripped to shreds as we speak. And it has a completely understandable and traceable source to it. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of a primer before we jump into this. What I have here, folks, is a YouTube video, audio for the program, of various rabbis and Jewish authorities who are talking about the Judaic command that they are to destroy us. So what you're going to be listening to here, folks, in listening to, in hearing the things, I think it's 10 minutes worth of various discussions and lectures that these individuals are giving, you're going to be hearing the words of the death warrant that has been written against you thousands of years before you were ever born. You know, going back to the email that my friend sent me where he said, you know, people are afraid of everything, lions and tigers and bears, sharks, hyenas, tornadoes, and all the rest of that, but they don't have any fear for these people who have sworn a blood oath to our destruction, and it's just very hard to understand. Now, as a little primer to this, folks, there are some terms here, some terminology that that you need to know if you're going to understand exactly what these insane followers of Judaism are saying. If you go back to your Bible and you read in the book of Genesis, you're going to read the story of Jacob and Esau. So they are the two sons of Isaac and Rebekah, I believe. Okay, they're twins. Esau was born first, and Jacob was born second. The Jews trace their lineage to Jacob, and the peoples of Europe. The Jews believe the peoples of Europe came from Esau. In the in the biblical lore, Jacob sat in his tent all day, tugging at his mother's apron strings, doing nothing productive, whereas Esau was a, quote, man of the field, which we could easily interpret to be, you know, he was a farmer. He was a home builder. He was somebody who was productive, who did productive things. And as the story goes, Jacob, who obviously had no skills and had nothing to market for himself in earning a living, because Esau was the firstborn, that meant that Esau was going to inherit his father's estate, and Jacob would be left with nothing. And so Jacob and his mother conspire, and they figure out a way to rob Esau of his inheritance, which they do. And as the Judaic lore goes, Esau has hated Jacob ever since. Well, why wouldn't he, folks? Why wouldn't he? And interestingly enough, you know, the Jews themselves understand this story. They understand, they trace all anti-Semitism, as they call it, all hatred and opposition, hatred towards them, opposition towards their very existence, to this squabble, this fight between these two brothers, who, according to the Bible, they got along just fine until Jacob robbed Esau of his inheritance. Now, folks, this is the background to what you're going to be hearing right now. And I want you to pay careful, close attention to it, because, like I said, it is the linchpin in understanding why all of us right now find ourselves at the precipice of our own destruction. So we're just going to sit back here and listen. I'm going to be pausing and playing as we go in order to bring some contextualization into this. This is very disturbing, folks, very disturbing stuff, folks. So I encourage you to listen very carefully.
We speak about the mitzvah to destroy and to annihilate the nation of Amalek. Says the Rambam in Mitzvah 188 and also 189 and also in Negev Commandment 59. That there's a mitzvah and a command to wipe out from among all the descendants of Esav, the descendants of Amalek, male and female, young and old.
Esav.
Okay, folks, it's going to be a little bit bouncy here. Let's see, I just, descendants, hold on, writing while I'm listening to these insane people. Okay, so who is this this nation of Amalek, as he says? You know, folks, if I did, I think I ran this YouTube video on the Ugly Truth website. It's a very disturbing thing just to watch them. It's not just that they have these voices that indicate that there's something wrong upstairs in their attics, but the way that they sway back and forth. You know, I recently made a trip back east, and I had the extreme displeasure of being seated across the aisle from one of these Judaic types. And you could see him swaying back and forth and side to side. And when you watch this video, obviously, you know, we can't show the video on the podcast, but if you watch it, they do this. They're always swaying back and forth and side to side. And the only thing that I could really compare it to is if you watch these snake charmers and, you know, this cobra comes out of his little den and this snake charmer is blowing on his little flute or whatever. And this is what these cobras do. Anyway, going on to what he says here, he is talking about the mitzvah, which, folks, I'm going to just operate under the assumption that many of you do not know what some of these horrible Hebraic words are. Mitzvah is a religious commandment, okay, either a thou shalt or thou shalt not. Now, in the law of Moses, which these people follow, there are 613 of these mitzvahs, okay, that they are commanded to do. And they got to do every one of them, folks, okay, whether it's not eating pork, whether it's not mixing meat and milk, whether it's chopping the hand off of a woman who accidentally touched her husband's genitals when he was being attacked by a group of bandits or robbers, and her effort to try and save his life. You know, when, if you've ever been in a fight, you know, arms and fists are going all over the place, and she accidentally touches his crotch, you have to cut her hand off. Okay, that's one of those mitzvahs. One of those other mitzvahs that the Jews, Hebrews, Israelites, Judeans, whatever word we want to use in describing them, it all means the same thing, is that they are to annihilate the nation of Amalek. Now, who is Amalek? Well, Amalek is the grandson of Esau, who I just described a few moments ago. Esau, whose brother, twin brother Jacob, Esau had his inheritance stolen from Jacob. Okay? So the story goes in the Old Testament, the Torah, whatever you want to call it, is that when the poor beleaguered Hebrews were fleeing Egypt with all of the gold and silver that they had stolen from their Egyptian friends and neighbors under the pretext that they were just going to borrow it and give it back to them, this nation of people known as Amalek, who lived in the desert, that they attacked the Hebrews. And so they have this commandment that they are to exterminate the nation of Amalek and all of Amalek's descendants. Well, as you're going to hear, folks, in these discussions, Amalek is you, especially if you are of European descent, if you are a Christian, as you're going to hear with your own ears. Amalek is you. They have sworn, as I said, a blood oath to your destruction, and a destruction which is taking place, as I said, right now in real time. So let's just hear what this next insane Hebrew has to say.
Who is the symbol of all the nations, Christians or not?
Esau, who in modern day terms is really basically, certainly one of them is America.
What's the difference between Edom and Amalek? We spoke about Edom being the grandfather of Amalek. Amalek is Germany, so who's Edom? Edom includes most of Europe. It includes the United States of America. It's the Roman Empire that was never destroyed. But for those of you who don't understand that Italy is the seat of the Roman Empire, of Edom, even though Edom is scattered, many other nations today that speak Latin languages that have something of the Roman Empire, including America. They are first. So Edom is everywhere, and the United States of America is also part of Edom.
It all started off.
Okay, so let's see. There's a lot there that they're saying. So when they say Esau, what they mean is Esau. And they include America in that. As we've said many years on the website and on this program, the Jews are in the process of destroying the West, not because the West is white, okay, as many white nationalists will contend, but rather because the West today is the modern-day representation of the same Roman Empire that destroyed Israel 2,000 years ago. And you know, the Jews, they always celebrate the defeat of their enemies. Okay, Passover celebrates the defeat of Egypt. Let's see, Purim celebrates the destruction of Iran, Persia. Hanukkah, or as our good friend Mike Piper used to disparagingly refer to it, Hanukkah, celebrates the destruction of Greece. There's no celebration for the destruction of Rome, folks, because it hasn't happened yet. But they're in the process of doing that. That is what all of this is about. This is what the resurrection, the unholy resurrection of Israel, what this is about. It's not about giving the poor, beleaguered, little persecuted Jews a place to call their own. No, it's about going back and undoing the events of 70 AD when the Romans came in and leveled the place and scattered the Jews and refused them from ever going back again. And Rome is, as one of these rabbis says very plainly, Rome still exists. It was never destroyed. Okay, it's just gone by different names now. And the most important part of that Roman Empire, of course, is America. And this is the reason why not only we see these wars going on in the Middle East, but why these very powerfully entrenched Jewish groups are agitating for war with Russia, war with China. It's all about creating a new religious celebration, only this time it will be celebrating the destruction of Rome. Let's continue on listening, folks.
Started, of course, with Esav. Esav became Edom, which is a nation. Edom became Rome. The Torah says Esav is Edom. The Gemara says, the Talmud says, that Rome, that Edom is Rome, is Rome.
Edom becomes America. Why? Because America is Edom, after all.
As our sages said, Halakha hi, Esav sone le Yaakov. It is a law of nature that Esav will always hate the Jewish people. Will hate Jacob. Jacob is the Jewish people. And Esav is the non-Jewish world.
In Isaiah.
Okay. So very interestingly, folks, something to keep in mind as you hear this. 99% of this discussion involves the Torah. Now, there is some commentary in the Talmud that takes place with regards to this, but most of it comes from the Torah. Now, this is very important, folks, and I know it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse here, but, you know, I had an interesting conversation with a very good friend of mine, a Muslim, and he said, he referred to me as a warrior, which I don't consider myself a warrior, folks, okay? I just say what I mean, and I mean what I say, and, you know, I have no delusions of grandeur about my place in any of this. I just feel like there are things that need to be said, and so I say them. And I said, well, he said, no, you're a warrior because you stand guard at the wall, and you don't allow the enemy of untruths to come in. And I thought, okay, well, I can live with that. And, you know, in that regard, folks, I spend a lot of time trying to re-educate people over this issue of the Talmud and the Torah, because unfortunately we've got this neighborhood of problematic individuals who have made a name for themselves saying that the untruth that the Jews today, that they have no connection to their Torah. And they'll find one or two little quotes from somebody within the Jewish community who has made a statement like that over the years. Yeah, we don't follow the Torah anymore. We follow the Talmud. Well, folks, all that the Talmud is an exegetical discussion of the Torah. When the temple was destroyed and the Jews didn't have their daily sacrifice, all of a sudden now the rules have to change, okay, because now they've been scattered, there's no temple, there's no sacrifice, and so they have to come up with ways of making sure that these 613 mitzvim, I think is how they say it in plural in Hebrew, that horrible, horrible, diabolical language, that's all that it is these discussions and debates amongst these rabbis about how the Torah is going to be implemented while the Jews are living outside of the quote-unquote promised land. Okay. Now, it sounds like I'm splitting hairs here, but I'm not, folks, because as I have said before, our survival and our liberation is only going to be won by two things. Number one is a miracle, okay? An absolute miracle, because we absolutely are outmanned and outgunned on this by a factor of 666, okay? A miracle. And number two, we have to make sure that we understand exactly the nature of who and what our enemy is. And when we have people out there who are spreading the disinformation that this is all a Talmud thing rather than a Torah thing, it simply isn't true. When you have a door with a lock on it, and you have a key for that door, for that lock, if you look at the key, there are all of these ridges, you know, mountains and valleys. And each one of those things has got to be perfect. It has to be mathematically perfect. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to put that key in the slot and that it's going to turn. And it's like that with the machinery of our salvation. Okay, we can't allow any inaccuracies or outright lies to come in, because it's going to prevent us from unlocking the key to our own existence. Okay. Now, let's see. Let's go on and listen to what some of these other insane Jews have to say.
Isaiah chapter 63, the day of the great and terrible day of the Lord. It says that the Lord will come out from a place called Edom and he will crush Edom. Now, I'm just a broadcaster here. Okay. In Jewish understanding, Edom is really talking about the Christianity.
Who is Amalek?
Okay, now this is very important, folks. I remember years ago, I had a very, very close relationship with our parish priest, a very, very educated man, and I always gleaned a lot of wisdom from him. As I started to become interested in all of this political business involving the Jews, I could see that there was a great disparity between, the teachings of Jesus versus the teachings of Moses. And so I asked him, I said, how can this be? Because, you know, it just seems like they're just two different people here. How can we say that all of these people who came before Jesus, who Jesus referred to as thieves and liars, that they were all, you know, this progression of good people that finally had its culmination or fulmination with Jesus Christ? And he said, well, because Jesus was predicted in the Old Testament. That's why the Old Testament is considered valid in terms of Christianity. And I said, well, where was his arrival predicted? And he said, well, with the Messiah, with the predictions of the Messiah. Well, what we're listening to right now, folks, this Jew talking about the predictions of Isaiah 63, where he's talking about who Edom is. Edom is an area to the east of Judea. And this is the place where, as the Jews believed, the descendants of Esau, that they had set up their own kingdom there. And that the Messiah, okay, that the Moshiach, as the Jews refer to him, that he's going to come from this area. But when you actually go back and read these Old Testament prophecies, folks, about this Messiah, he has no bearing whatsoever with what we know about Jesus Christ. Now, I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of trouble finding this thing here. Hold on just a second. Hold on just a second, folks. Yes, so this is from, Isaiah 63. This is exactly what he's referring to. Now, I want you, supposedly, folks, this is the prediction. This is the depiction of Jesus Christ 1,000 years before he showed up. This is the description that supposedly links Jesus to the Old Testament. And it reads as follows. Who is this coming from Edom in blood crimsoned garments? Who is this majestic in attire, pressing forward in his great might? Quote, it is I, he who makes war victoriously, powerful and triumphant. Why is your clothing so red? Your garments like those who tread grapes. Quote, I trod out a vintage by myself. From the peoples, no man was with me. I trod them down in my anger, trampled them in my rage. Their lifeblood bespattered my garments, and all my clothing was stained. For I had planned a day of vengeance, and my year of redemption arrived. My own arm wrought the triumph, and my own rage was my aid. I trampled peoples in my anger, I made them drunk with my rage, and I hurled their glory to the ground. Now, supposedly, folks, this is the basis upon which the early church, this is the basis that was used to join this Old Testament and New Testament together. As you can see, there's no reasonable, rational comparison between the person of Jesus Christ and this Jewish Messiah that this insane Hebrew is talking about here. There's no resemblance whatsoever. The one that the Jews are waiting for is going to be this warlord like a Netanyahu or a Bennett or a Ben-Gavir or any of these other insane Hebrews who have come to power in the most recently elected government. The reason that I point this out is that as our deranged follower of Judaism is making clear here, out of Edom's destruction, and remember, folks, Edom is the West. Edom is Europe, America, the nation of the Amalekites. Out of Edom's destruction, the Messiah that the Jews have been waiting for 4,000 years, he is going to come forth from that destruction, according to Jewish prophecy. The destruction of Christianity. And remember, they make very, very specific mention about Rome itself. Now, folks, the reason that Rome today is a matter of any importance is because it is the seat of the Roman Catholic Church, which took over not just in a religious sense, but in a political sense after the fall of the Roman Empire in the 5th century, I believe. They are absolutely absolutely devoted to seeing the destruction of Christianity in general, but of the Roman Catholic Church in particular, because it is the modern day representation of the same system that, because interestingly enough, folks, one of the things that I just learned was that the Caesars, they weren't just political leaders in Rome. They were also, they were the high priest. They were the high priest in the Roman pagan, religion. And they could issue all sorts of religious decrees as political leaders, religious decrees, interestingly enough. Okay, let's continue on with listening here, folks.
Amalek. Amalek is Reshit Goim. The Jews were so revered by the entire world when they came out of Egypt. But when Amalek, which is the grandchild of Esav, Yaakov's brother, saw them, Amalek came and attacked the Jews. And therefore God commands us that we should never forget this. This is why the most important Torah reading of the year is Zachor. God commands Moses to tell Yehoshua that he must annihilate Amalek. And this battle between Amalek, good and evil, goes from generation to generation. So Amalek, we know Hitler and Haman and all of those other gang of people that wanted to annihilate the Jews are part of this terrible gang. Because Amalek is darkness. They're the antithesis to godliness and holiness. Everything the Jewish nation stands for, if the Jewish nation stands for humility, godliness, light, they are darkness. And we are commanded to destroy this because Amalek is not only a physical nation, it's a spiritual energy. It's a negative force of darkness.
It's mitzvah.
Okay, folks. So, I apologize for that eerie music in the background. Somebody sent this to me. I didn't put the video together. But an important thing to keep in mind as we're listening to this, folks. These insane people who are talking about our destruction, this didn't begin, in 1947 with the creation of the State of Israel. They have been talking like this for 4,000 years. This is what I try to get across in these programs and in the things that I write on the website. You're dealing with somebody who has hated you because of you being a Gentile, and especially if you are a descendant of Esau or a descendant of Ishmael, meaning an Arab, a Persian, or a Turk. They have hated you for thousands of years before you were ever born. You know, it's one thing to have an enemy who hates you because you've known each other for some time, and maybe you did something to make them angry, and now they have sworn themselves to your utter ruination. These people have hated you for thousands of years before you were ever a mere thought in someone's, in the thought of your mother and father. We're dealing here with a hatred that really can only be described as diabolical. And everything that we are witnessing right now, everything that's taking place, both here in the West, with watching as our political and social and cultural institutions are just going up in flames, the destruction of our societies, the destruction of our families, the destruction of our youth because of the corrosive influence that these people have over media and information systems, or whether it's the destruction that we're witnessing taking place in the Middle East that right now is literally on, all it's going to take is a gust of wind, folks. And all of these smoldering embers are going to burst into flame that will have reverberations that you will feel right at home. It is all based upon this hatred that these people have had for us ever since the days of Cain and Abel. And Jesus Christ himself made mention of this when he was casting his curses on the Pharisees. And he said, I will send wise men to you who some of them you will kill and crucify and flog and pursue from town to town. And so upon you, all of the righteous blood that has been shed all the way back to Abel, all of that righteous blood will fall upon you. This is what we are dealing with, folks. We are dealing with a group of people who hate us for the same irrational reasons that Cain hated his brother Abel. All right, let's pick this up.
from the Torah, one of the 613 commandments, is to remember to erase the nation of Amalek, the memory of them even, not only physically to erase them from the face of the earth. Anything that reminds us about them is mitzvah to dismiss and to erase it from the face of the earth. Hashem said to King Shaul, now it's time to destroy Amalek. Don't leave one survivor. Destroy the entire nation of Amalek with their animals, everything that is owned by them. No Jews are allowed to enjoy from it. Do not leave any memory from them. Hashem say, do not have mercy on the children. Kill all their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way. Hashem knows, God knows. You kill all men and all women. Me'olel ve'ad yonek. Even babies who breastfeed. Amazing. Mishor ve'atze, all axes, all goats, camels, donkeys. Don't leave anything, any memory from this filthy nation.
Why are the names?
Okay, folks, let's see. So, I had a little notation here. Destroy, you know, no mercy on their children. Do you understand now a little better why the influence of organized Jewish interests in the West, and especially in America, why they have pushed abortion as hard as they have? Okay. Right now, ever since the overturning of Roe versus Wade, there is just a tsunami of court cases that are being brought at the state level, arguing that at the state level, that the laws against murdering unborn children, that they are unconstitutional. And the groups that are bringing these, cases, folks, I'll give you a hint. They're not Muslims. They're not Roman Catholics. They are all of the Hebraic, pedigree. And they're arguing that they are being denied their freedom of religion because their religion, their Judaism, tells them that not only are they permitted to engage in child murder, but that they are religiously required to do so if it is going to impact the mother in any kind of negative way, including, you know, it's going to make her depressed or whatever. Okay. So the push for abortion in at least in America and in the West, disproportionately heavy by these Jewish activists, is part of this process of destroying Amalek, all the way down to the little children, as our deranged rabbi himself says. All right, let's pick it up, folks.
The nations, why are they goyim? The idol worshippers. Why are they mezoamim? What's mezoamim? Mezoamim means they're impure. Their natural state is being impure. Goy's natural state is impurity.
Erase the name of Amalek. Do not forget. We assume that anyway, every enemy of Israel, every anti-Semite, stems from the seed of Amalek.
This is what Hashem said.
Okay, so again, folks, the natural state of the Gentile is to be impure. And, you know, another thing that I wanted to point out, folks, I forgot when I said before, you know, these discussions that you're hearing now, I'm sure that if somebody had the time and the energy to do it, they could come up with not just 10 minutes worth of these sound bites, but weeks and months and years worth of them. These are the things that they talk about when they get together, when they get together in synagogue and they read their various portions of the Torah where they are commanded to do this against us and that against us. And this is why I say, folks, there is no such thing as a good Jew. If they adhere to their Judaism in any fashion, they know better than anybody. They know what their religion teaches about us. They have sat in on these discussions and on these synagogue services where they have heard with their own ears what it is their religion commands them to do against us. Now, I was thinking earlier, folks, of an adequate comparison to this. You know, going back to what we were talking about before with cobras. Cobras, one of the most dangerous animals in the world. If you get bitten by it, usually, you know, unless you get immediate emergency treatment, you'll be dead in 15 minutes. And then you have other snakes where you can get bitten by them, and it might take you days to die. And this really is, I think, the best way, one of the ways to compare the difference between these right-wing and left-wing Jews. Okay. You have snakes that bite you and kill you instantly. These are like the right-wing Netanyahu snake types. And then you have the left-wing types that leave you in agony while you spend days dying. But nevertheless, they are all dedicated to our destruction. They do not believe in live and let live. Okay. And every one of them, because the way that the yearly cycle works as far as their synagogue services, they begin the year on Yom Kippur, whatever it is, and they start reading the Torah from the beginning, the book of Genesis, and then every week they read the next portion, and then the next week the portion after that. And so however many years they have been alive, that's how many times they have heard in their weekly synagogue services the commandment to go out and to utterly annihilate Amalek, the descendants of Esau. And they take that, they take those thoughts and they go out into the world, folks, as lawyers, as doctors, as political lobbyists, as important media people, as bankers. They take that poison mindset of annihilating Amalek and they put it into practice. And this is one of the reasons, no, this is the reason that we see things falling apart in our world today. And, you know, folks, we can't blame them. What they do, they are doing as good followers of Judaism. They are doing what their religion tells them to do. If we want to look for somebody to blame for this, we need to look amongst our own people going back 2,000 years who knew these things, who knew, understood these teachings about these people and didn't warn us about it. Okay, let's pick it up.
Hashem said, Pakadeti et asher asa Amalek liYisrael. The nature of this nation, Amalek, we don't know who Amalek is. We assume that it's the Germans after we see what they did in the Holocaust, not only to the Jews, to the whole world. And it's not only the Germans, it's most of the European countries. That's where Amalek is.
As a people blessed with a long memory, we as Jews summon sacred texts and ancient histories to guide us in times of uncertainty. Yes, the situation today is frightful, but no, it is not unprecedented. In America today, we have white supremacy. In the Torah, we had Amalek. Blotting out the memory of Amalek is a military command, literally to destroy Amalek. Now facing today's Amalek, we are reminded that the Torah calls us not just to escape, but to extirpate Amalek. We are commanded to do real and literal battle against it. That means coming off the bench in the fight against white supremacy. It means putting our reputations and our money and our physical bodies on the line.
The descent.
Okay, so here we have, you know, up until this point, folks, we've been listening to all of these horrible, horrible rabbis talking in this very heavy accent, accented voice. And, you know, it's one thing to hear somebody, you know, speaking in a foreign way, talking about foreign ideas in with a foreign accent. But then we have an American rabbi, okay, one of our own, okay, one of our own citizens here in the United States, where yes, he is specifically talking about white supremacism, quote unquote, but what he really means, folks, is Christian civilization, all of us. And he uses the word, he talks about it being a military command, meaning a coercive deadly force in destroying Amalek here in America. He uses the word extirpate. And for those of you who don't understand, you know, the Jews are very verbose people. They like to show off their intellects by using a lot of big words. Extirpate means to root out and to completely destroy. So it's not just these Jews in Israel with their horrible diabolical accents. It's right here at home as well, folks. All right, let's pick it up.
Descendants of the enemies of our people that were enemies to people from day first are still hating us in the commandment of their ancestors, the children of Esav that hates Yaakov, the children of Amalek that hates Yaakov, the children of all the ones that had that black bitterness instead of a soul, that black, dark, horrible, depressed, negative, and awful shadow as a poor replacement for a soul, still hating us, still jealous, still don't know what to do with our goodness.
Yes. Sorry, folks. Jealousy, our goodness, hating us for our goodness, black soul, all of this stuff, folks. The reason that I find that particular section there so interesting is that the Jews themselves know, by virtue of understanding what their scriptures teach, that all of this began, this hatred of Esau towards Jacob, okay, Esau being the Gentiles and Jacob being the Hebrews, Israelites, Judeans, Judites, Jews, whatever you want to call them, it all came as a result of Jacob robbing his brother Esau, an act of war, an act of malice and hatred. If somebody steals something from, and who knows what it is, folks, what it really was, if anything like that took place. Okay. You know, we read that Jacob stole Esau's blessing from his father. It probably was something, anything along those lines took place, it was probably something much worse than that. Cheated him out of his home, cheated him out of, you know, stole all of his money, you know, robbed him of something. And the Jews themselves to this day, 4,000 stinking years later, have yet to put the cause and effect principle at work here to say, you know what, maybe the reason that the Gentiles hate us, the descendants of Esau hate us so much, is because of what our forefather did in robbing him of something that was of importance to him. My reason for bringing this up, folks, is that they've had thousands of years to do this very simple math in understanding this. They have not done it. They will never do it. They'll never do it. We can't wait around for the Jews to figure out that they are everyone's worst enemy, theirs and ours. They'll never do this. It always, you know, the story always begins with their persecution, and we never hear about the events leading up to it. All right, let's pick it up.
All you anti-Semites out there, your day is gone. And if you decide to become an open group of anti-Semites, your days will be numbered. Someone from the Jewish special forces will take you out, just like they take out hundreds of Muslim criminals, hundreds of jihadists each year. They'll take you out as well.
The Torah says that people who worship idols such as yourself, when there is a Sanhedrin,
to kill us.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what the Torah says.
So we know how the Jewish people feel about Christians, yes? That you discriminate against Christians.
Christians are idol worshippers.
You discriminate against Christians.
The Torah says that Christianity is idol worship.
Let me ask you.
You worship three gods.
Let me ask.
Well, what's the punishment if you transgress the Noahide laws? Death. Now, technically speaking, I see anyone in the church, you know, and they're bowing down, they're a non-Jew, I can shoot them. Not a problem.
Asking.
Okay. Okay, so let's see. The first one, our insane Hebrew talking about sending a hit squad out for people, just like they have done to Muslims who were involved in jihad. Again, folks, jihad, we don't have to worry about jihad. There's that's spelled wrong. Okay, it's not jihad. It is juhad. Okay, juhad. It's not jihad. It is juhad. Just one letter. One little letter is all that it takes in understanding, putting all of the pieces of this puzzle of our own destruction that is taking place right now in real time together in an understandable manner. Okay, it's not jihad, it's juhad. Next, one fellow is interviewing this insane Hebrew on the streets of Jerusalem. And, he says quite plainly, he says, look, Christians are idol worshippers and we are commanded by our Torah to kill them. Torah, not Talmud, folks. Torah. Keep that in mind next time somebody sends you an article talking about the good rabbis, the nice Jews of Naturi Karta, the Torah true Jews. No, folks, it all starts with the Torah. And then finally, we have this insane Jew who says that it is perfectly religiously and morally permitted for him to go into a church, and if he sees people kneeling down in a Christian church, to shoot them with a gun. Remember, folks, what you have to worry about, though, is Ahab the Arab.
Asking what's going to be with the Goyim when Mashiach comes. Will they be destroyed and annihilated? Someone asked, who cares? Okay. As a nation, they'll cease to exist, even as individuals. Every individual, no survivors. Not only as a nation, they'll cease to exist, even as individuals. As Goyim, they're gone. Their personality, as they exist, b'fnei atzmam, as they would exist independently of Klal Yisrael, they don't exist. They're done. In modern terminology, they call it cultural genocide. There's a term for it by the progressives. It's called cultural genocide. And they talk to use the word genocide. So that's the opinion who says Vikarka Kobane says that they'll be annihilated if it's lent as a, they basically learn there's gonna be cultural genocide. That you know what, the Goyim as they exist as Goyim, if they ask them, that's done with. Bottle of a bottle.
Okay, folks, that's the last one. As I said when we got started here, this is going to be disturbing to hear, but it's something that we have to. You're not going to hear this from your priest. You're not going to hear this from your pastors, your preachers. You won't hear it from the Pope. Okay. And like I said, folks, this is not a new thing. This is not a new thing. These are ancient beliefs, ancient teachings going all the way back to the very beginning. And which brings, I think, the opposition to Jesus Christ into clearer focus at the time, folks. Because when Jesus Christ came, he preached something that was completely anathema to them. Everything that he said, he might as well have been speaking in a completely different language. Everything, it was a war between him and the teachings of Moses from the very beginning. So anyway, folks, the reason I bring this up is because if you want to understand why we are witnessing all of these things taking place right now, you have to understand the mindset of these people who are bringing all of this about. And you've just heard just a few examples of this. I would be willing to bet my left earlobe, folks, left earlobe, that at any given moment, within a 24-hour period, there are thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of discussions taking place just like what you just heard all around the world among these people at any given moment, basically along the same lines of what you just heard. This is what we are facing, folks. It is not jihad by the Muslims. It is juhad by the followers of Judaism. Anyway, folks, today's program is a little bit disjointed because I'm thinking on three or four different things here that I'm looking outside and I'm watching as these gray clouds are getting closer and closer. And I know I got to get back out there and get things ready for the arrival of winter, which, as I said, will be here within literally 15 minutes. So it was a little bit disjointed today. My apologies for that. I hope to be back on Sunday And like I said, folks, now that I've got a nice place to do my broadcast, I hope to be doing this on a very regular basis. Anyway, folks, like I said, this is the kind of conversations that you need to be having with the people around you. Okay. Trying to debate what is going on in Gaza is a waste of time, especially amongst your Christian evangelical, friends, family members, whatever. They are as much under the spell. Now, this is very important, folks. Something that really hit me today. You can't convince them that they're on the wrong side of history on this, meaning their support for Israel, support for the war against the quote-unquote terrorists of Gaza. Anybody who has spent any time debating somebody who's from the pro-abortion camp, you know that it's a waste of time. You will never, ever get them to take that poison lollipop out of their mouth. They love abortion, and they've got all of the reasons why it needs to be, you know, part of the institution of life, no pun intended, within wherever it is that they happen to live. You'll never convince them of that. It's the same thing dealing on the other side of the spectrum, dealing with the pro-Israel types. You can argue with them all day long and tell them, though, the particulars of this. Like, for example, how is it possible, first of all, that Israel's intelligence services, the best in the world, that they didn't see this coming? How is this possible? These are God's chosen people, the God that supposedly sent the plagues and parted the sea and did all this crazy crap for them, and yet, you know, all of these bad things happen to them. What about all this business about them being chosen and protected and all the rest of that? Why do they need Americans and their money and political support and all the rest of that? Where's Yahweh in all of this? You'll never change their minds about this because this is the poisoned lollipop that they have come to love. Okay. What I'm saying, folks, is don't waste your time trying to debate them. Trying to debate the Sean Hannity's or, you know, calling in to get on this program. Forget it. You'll never do it. These people love this. Just like the pro-death crowd on the left, they love abortion and the killing of children. The pro-death crowd on the right, I mean, think about this, you know, the same pro-life crowd you know, champions unborn life. What about how many children were murdered in their wombs in Gaza in the last 2 weeks since Israel started bombarding this place? How many women went into premature labor and their babies didn't live through it? How many children? We know how many children. Over 1,000 little children were blown to bits in this giant human sacrifice that's been taking place. And again, folks, not because of jihad, but because of jihad. Anyway, folks, again, this was a little bit disjointed today. My brain's in 10 different places right now. I hope it made sense. You know, I always... It's funny because the programs that I feel the least confident about are the ones that get the most kind comments, and the ones that I walk away from it after doing it, I say to myself, yeah, that's a pretty good program, are the ones that I hear the least about. So I don't get it. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again this coming Sunday, hopefully God willing, pray for a miracle, folks, because quite frankly, we really, really need